has something on her heart she wants to share. What a gift that is. And so, Alexis, it's in your hands.
Thank you. Like always, we have to start off with a joke. How does Moses make his tea? He brews it. Today, I want to talk about hope. I want to talk about different definitions of hope, why it matters, and how it can make our life better, also included with a story of mine. I hope this sermon today will impact you as much as it has impacted me. First, let's look at different definitions of hope. I have the definitions on the screen. The first one says a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen. And the other one says a feeling of trust. Both of these definitions are a good summing up of what hope is like in our community, in ourselves, and in our faith. When you have hope, you know and expect that everything is going to be okay. You also have a feeling of trust in God and in yourself. But my favorite part out of here is a feeling of trust. Another definition of hope is an optimistic attitude of mind based on an expectation of positive outcomes related to events and circumstances in one's life or the world at large. As a verb, its definitions include to expect with confidence and to cherish a desire with anticipation. Two words stuck out to me in this, and that was an optimistic attitude. Now that we have some ideas of what hope is like, let's read a Bible story. This one is Mark chapter 5, verses 21 through 43. In this story, Jesus was visiting people, and he finds some in need. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet, instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion, with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. In this story, it talks about two extreme cases. one of a woman who had been bleeding for 12 years, and another girl who was thought to have died. We're going to be comparing both scenarios, specifically on their hope. Both problems were probably hard enough for their families and their doctors, who had done as much as they could. Now, the woman knew that this could be close to the end, but she knew someone who could help her, and that was Jesus. The woman knew that if she touched his clothes, she will be healed. How did she know this would happen? How was she sure that everything was going to be okay? Hope. This woman was filled with hope that Jesus could save her life and give her freedom from her suffering. She had hope that everything would be okay. That's why she didn't give up. Now, let's take a look at the family with the daughter. For this one, they laughed at Jesus when he told them that she was just sleeping. They were so done with the situation, had done everything that they could, and it felt so tough that they had just given up. They didn't have any hope that this girl was perhaps just sleeping. They didn't have hope that Jesus could do anything about it anymore. But Jesus still healed her, and the daughter was fine. So we have two different scenarios, one of a woman who was filled with hope, and another of a family with none. At the end, both people got saved, but the difference was in their hope. When we have hope, things are so much easier, and although we may be in rough times, we still have hope that everything will be okay. We are so much less vulnerable to things in the world that would beat us down if we had none. We are 100 times stronger with hope. On the other hand, not having hope can make things harder than they really are. It seems like there's nothing you can do, and it feels like it's the end. It sometimes seems like the world is over, kind of like the family with the daughter. Life isn't that great without hope. I was privileged to be able to join 16 of our other youth and adults when we went to Charleston, South Carolina for the Week of Hope mission trip this summer. A few weeks before we left, I heard about the Charleston church shooting. It scared me for sure, and I was completely shocked that this event had happened right before we were planning to leave. Christine mentioned that God knew that this was going to happen, and we were all so happy that God led us to go to Charleston months and months ago. Charleston needed our help most right now, and we couldn't wait to bring joy and hope to so many different people who were affected by this event. But I have to admit, I was still pretty concerned about going to Charleston and staying in that area for a week. I thought about what could happen next. Even though some other youth assured me that Charleston is probably the safest place it's been in a long time, I still didn't want anything to do with it. I remember getting the place that we were staying at, which was Northwood Baptist Church. And I put it into Google Maps, along with the Mother Emmanuel Church. I wanted to see how far away it was. It turns out we were 15 miles away, which I was actually relieved. Not being in the area where just weeks ago someone had gone into a church just like we were staying at and shot and killed 9 people. This reassured the safety to me. But now that I am here and back from that amazing experience, why did I want to be as far away as possible from this church? I wanted to be as far away as where this incident had happened. But why? During our free night on Tuesday, we decided to go to downtown Charleston to eat, shop, and also walk to the church. We were all really excited but anxious to see what we have been seeing every day now in pictures. Pictures of the church, of the flowers, and the people there, all in real life person. As soon as this church was in our sights, I knew that it wasn't just me who had already been changed. This place was brightened by all sorts of flowers, posters, candles, signs, letters, you name it. In front of this whole church, probably there was 3 or more square feet of, you couldn't see the sidewalk anymore. Not only were there already flowers and letters everywhere, there was people that were organizing the flowers, putting more up, and fixing anything that had fallen. I never really found out if those people were somehow already connected to this church, but I believe this was just a random act of kindness. There were probably around 50 or 75 people, other people there. This was about 7 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. There were whites and there were African Americans. There were some who were walking around and taking pictures, others who were talking to the other people there, and others who were just standing or sitting in silence. I didn't want to take any pictures, so I took this time to sit down, have a moment of silence, and pray. It was so touching to me because I realized how much had happened and how the community responded to it. I realized that because of what happened, Charleston and even the whole world could have been broken down in riots and fights, fighting for equality and civil rights that we still don't fully have. But instead, this time, not only Charleston, but the whole world was there, teaming up, honoring, and remembering the 9 lives that were lost, willing to team up for the community to help everyone recover. Now, this is how the beginning of the story comes into play. I thought to myself, why didn't I want to be as close to this church as possible? Did I not want to see the event play back in my head? Did I not want to see this quote-unquote gloomy church? Because that's not what I saw. What I saw that night was hope. Hope that there is still peace and equality made by so many others. I saw respect and kindness and open minds. It was really one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen before in my life. To think that I was so selfish to put both locations into Google Maps and calculate how far away we were from this church. I can't believe it. I feel ashamed. Before we left, Christine decided to get all the youth together to hold hands and pray. Christine started to pray, and then we all took turns praying for the community and the people, and also thanking him for giving us hope and peace where we could have had even more violence. This prayer lasted for a while, and a lot of people who usually don't speak out to pray, including me, prayed. Small or big, we had all made a difference to ourselves in our youth group. But not only that. When we closed in prayer, we opened our eyes to see around 20 other people, people who we've never met before, praying with us. They hadn't started out with us, but somehow in the middle of the prayer, they had walked in and joined. This was one of the most beautiful and amazing moments of my life. I can barely talk about this without tearing up. Just seeing that we had not only made a difference to ourselves, but for people who were with us, respecting and honoring this event, coming together as one, I can tell you that there is absolutely nothing that could have been more beautiful than that moment. Having an optimistic attitude about everything is hard, especially when the cases are pretty rough. I'm not sure we can be optimistic all the time, even though we try to. But the more we are optimistic, the easier it is to be optimistic. This helps us because we know that even though we're going through rough times that seems like there's no end, we know there always is. I can't tell you that there will never be points in your life that won't be nervous and won't be so anxious. It's going to happen. It happens to everyone. And just because you don't have that powerful hope that you're supposed to have every single day of the year, which by the way, isn't going to happen, doesn't mean that you won't get through. We are the creators of our future, just like we're the creators of our hope. Maybe not fully, but we have the power of giving ourselves hope and confidence, despite not being 100% confident already. But we also have the choice that we could break ourselves down even more and give up that hope. Our minds, words, and thoughts really do have an impact on us. A lot of times we say other things could make you or break you, but I certainly believe that we can make or break ourselves. A lot of people think that hope is given by just God, which it is given by God. But that doesn't mean that hope can't come from ourselves, because it can. When we don't have hope anymore, don't just rely on the Father to give you some, because you can make hope for yourself. It's possible. Even though you might not be able to find hope right now, doesn't mean hope has never come to you. And it doesn't mean that hope won't come to you in the future. And even though we can't be 100% confident and hopeful all the time, God will provide us hope when we can't ourselves. With hope, we can do so much more things. We feel more confident in ourselves, in the world we live in, and the pressure we are under. Think about anything in your life. It could be your family, friends, your job, your school, anything in your life that seems hopeless. Think about what's stopping you from living a hopeful life, because most of the time, it's you. A lot of times, everything around us cannot be controlled. We cannot move people to where we want them to go like weemies. Neither can we change a grade, or usually we can't change a mind. And we can't change what violence and cruelty happens around the world on a daily basis. So one of the only things that we can control is the way we think and the way we act. The way we look at hope, the way we acquire hope, and the way we keep hope when it's hard not to lose it. Look at this picture on the next slide. The dry dirt is our life, our world, and sometimes even our faith. And that plant is our hope. Hope is inside each and every one of you. Sometimes it can be bigger than other times, but I will assure you that it will always be there with God's love inside of it. Amen.